Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 3, Looking for Parmok in All the Wrong Places. Teleplay by Ronald D. Moore and directed by Andrew Robinson, who plays Garrick. Not in this episode. Looking for Parmok in All the Wrong Places aired on October 14th, 1996.
This week on Deep Space Nine, Worf helps Quark woo Grilka, his Klingon ex-wife. His being Quark.
Yes.
So Elise, I think I know the answer to this question, but I will ask it anyways. Did you or did you not remember this episode?
Yes, I remembered this. Maybe not all the maybe not the specifics of like the A plot and the B plot being in the same episode.
The same episode.
Yeah. But I definitely remembered both things for many reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was me too. I remembered both plot lines very clearly.
Yes. And
obviously like knew that the A plot would be the A plot based on the title, but I'd forgotten that the O'Brien the B plot was in this episode.
Don't you feel like maybe this should have been like a mid-February episode for Valentine's Day instead of mid-October? This episode was so much fun. It's obviously a sequel to House of Quark, which you were not on when we podcasted about.
I was not.
Lotsy had visited and we did that without you. I was sad to miss you because that's such a fun episode as well. We love Grilka. I mean, we don't get her back. She's only in two episodes, unfortunately. I will say that the last time I watched this episode, I had not really engaged with Cyrano, the play.
Right.
So when I was watching it this time, I was like, oh, this is very Cyrano. And then I was really happy when I read Memory Alpha and they were like, this is Cyrano. I was like, oh, good job, Elise.
And like there's no like direct like Jadzia like type character.
Yeah.
But the Quark Worf thing is
oh, totally. Very much that. He's helping like, Quark impress Grilka, but he's saying things he would wish he could say to her.
Yeah.
I just want everyone to know that I am very smart and I figured this out before reading Memory Alpha. And apparently it was Michael Dorn's suggestion to do a little Cyrano bit, which I think is a lot of fun.
Direct marketing. I thought of that. Turns out it already existed, but I arrived at it independently.
That's me about this episode and Cyrano, for sure. One of our favorite Pete Campbell from Mad Men quotes. And I was reading that Armin Shimerman did a lot of his stunts. So he practiced the batleth at home, which is adorable and great. When I say adorable, I don't mean to infantilize him or anything. I love Armin's dedication to Quark and like getting things correct. It's very honorable.
Well, yeah, totally. And like, I mean, I'm sure like he'd also had like experience with like swordplay and stuff, like, you know, through like some of his Shakespearean turns and things like that, right? So swordplay. No, that was even like last fall. A friend of a friend of mine was in a BFA students, and they were in their like stage combat course, so we went to their like final projects and got to see them do their like stage fighting routines with like swords and stuff. It's pretty fun. It's pretty cool.
I remember when we went to Con of Thrones, a couple of people we knew did the sword, the sword, the dragon,
the sword
jewels,
dance,
I think,
the water dancing.
Yeah. They said that was a lot of fun. I bet it'd be fun. I'm more interested in it now that I've been reading the Locked Tomb book series because there's a lot of sword fighting in that, and I'm just like, I wanna learn. So we do have. Oh, sorry, I don't want to skip over where you said your.
I mean, it can really like come up anywhere, but sure, let's talk about it. Like, I don't have a list of like my favorite top 10 DS9 episodes, but if I was to make a list, this one would. If it wasn't on it, it would definitely be in the conversation.
Yeah, sure. It's such a good one. A lot of good stuff happens. Maybe some stuff more for my headcanon than anything with relating to plot, the B plot. But like it starts, you know, one of my, let's just put it this way. I am a Worf and Jadzia shipper. So this is a big deal for me. I know a lot of people don't like that relationship for various reasons. And I'm just here to tell you that they're wrong.
Wait. People don't like Worf and Jadzia?
I think that a lot of people think Worf is just boring and doesn't deserve her.
Oh. And but like, isn't that like kind of like, why it works?
Yeah. I think she's really into it. So that's really all that matters to me.
Yeah.
Give Jadzia agency, y'all. I mean, obviously there's writers involved. So I really did love the B plot here because it feels so real as to like what would happen if you were in this exact situation of someone other than your wife is carrying your baby. And I don't mean in like a surrogacy way because that is not usually like the person moves in and all that, although I'm not an expert on surrogacy, so I guess I really shouldn't comment on that. But this, because they're all friends, like, you know, Kira's moved in with them. I really enjoyed all of the acting in this between Colm and Nana. Like, it was really, really well done. I really liked it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I don't know if we, like, always get a storyline like this in Star Trek to this degree. And what I mean by that is, you know, and Ron Moore, who wrote the episode, who is on the record as being, you know, as good as the A-plot was, almost more proud of the B-plot, he said. But it's like they're acting like real people to, like, a situation believably, right? Like, it's not like, yeah, oh, we're Starfleet officers. And like there isn't, like, the kind of airs. And, like, literally it's about what happens when people spend time together and start to develop a form of, you know, emotional attraction, intimacy, yeah, and attraction, and, like, you know, like physical attraction and everything. And, like, how do you navigate that very human and very kind of natural phenomenon that's going to kind of develop from that kind of proximity?
Yeah.
And how do you negotiate that, and how do you deal with it? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
and
it's very,
kind of,
very, very real.
Yeah, I feel, and I really like that they show it to us. They, like, start off this with a very comedic way to, like, bring us into the
battling
story.
O'Briens.
Quark and Julian are listening outside of the O'Brien's quarters, thinking that Keiko, or Julian, I should say, thinks that Keiko and Miles are arguing. But then Keiko walks by, and it's very clear that it's Miles and Nerys arguing. Mm-hmm. And of course, Quark, with his amazing ears, is able to, like, listen in and tell Julian, like, what the fight is about. I think it's really funny that also with relating to, like, you know, Kira being pregnant, like, Bashir's constantly trying to, like, fix her sneezing fits, which is, like, a thing that keeps coming up. And I just, you know, Miles and Kira, and I guess we can, I feel like when we're talking about her in this plot, we should be calling her Nerys, because it's about, you know, the person, not the major. And I mean, Julian, like, says to him, like, you're sampling her medication. And he's like, no, she didn't like the flavor. Like, I don't even believe him. Like, I'm sure that Miles tried it to, like, see if he liked, like, if it was bad. This is, like, obsessive daddy behavior. And yes, I mean that in, like, a sexual way. Like, he's just, like, trying to protect his baby. And, like, obviously, you know, his literal baby. But, like, you know, he's helping her out of the bathtub. I just love Julian's reaction to this. So this is basically why, in my headcanon, for a time at least, I believe that Miles, Keiko, and Nerys are in a throuple. Because Keiko's just, like, so encouraging of everything. And Keiko's, like, not an idiot, you know?
Yeah.
He's helping her out of the tub. He's giving her full body massages. I mean,
it's a body massage.
Yeah. I mean, he basically, it's so intimate. She basically is like, she's just become so close to him. Like, they have that one conversation where they're talking about Ireland and Miles misses, like, they're talking about personal things. Like, I don't think I've ever really seen them talk about personal things prior to this pregnancy. And you know, Kira slips and says, I could think of worse things than spending 3 weeks in Ireland with you. And then he says, me too. And they're clearly like, oh, we should not have said that or thought that. And I do think, like, the show is very, this show is pretty monogamous, unless you're just like Riker, I guess, for Star Trek. So, like, we have the scene where Odo is talking with Kira, and, like, she's defending his, like, I guess he's slacking off because he's been so busy, like, massaging her or whatever. And Odo's, like, a real dick about it. I'm like, this is shocking. The most, like, Odo is very judgy. And, like, I think it doesn't come to me from, like, someone that's in love with Kira in the scene. It just comes from, like, an asshole friend.
Him being annoyed.
Yeah. And he just, it's just a dick. Yeah. I do think, like, the text of what, like, in the show, like, they act like Keiko is, like, oblivious to all of this, but I don't think that that's true. I feel like she just, like, wants them to, like, I get the impression, like, it's, like, an example of, like, you know, Miles has a special kink that that Keiko's, like, not into, and it's like, go do it with Maurice.
Jesus.
Fair enough. I'm like, that's great.
That works. That works. With the consent of everyone involved.
Yeah.
And then even, like, that scene when they're, like, in the runabout, ready to go on the possibly romantic getaway.
Yes. Like, yeah, to the 200-year-old cottage.
Yeah.
It all
and just
seems,
even the way that... Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
It just seems, like, so romantic. Kind of reminded me of, I'm saying this, like, somewhat in jest, but, like, when they're on Naboo and, like, Attack of the Clones, like, falling in love. I mean, obviously the acting in that I don't love, but, like, the scenery was beautiful. So, like, that's kind of, like, what I imagined for this, but, like, maybe even more secluded.
Totally. And, like, I just even like the way that they, like, play that scene in which it's like, oh yeah, we shouldn't do this, and Kira's like, oh no, you know, I'm gonna see Shakar,
yeah,
and like all this stuff, and they hug, and then like there's that lingering moment when it's like the, like, I want to kiss you but I shouldn't kiss you, like that whole like vibe. It's so good.
Yeah, I think it's really awesome. I think that they're making a conscious decision to like not misbehave in a really respectful way, and they're,
yeah,
and I'm really, I don't know, like, I do feel like if they work this out, like, Keiko doesn't need to be involved, like, it's fine, no one acted inappropriately, they stopped it before then, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they're like, this would have been nice in another life.
Yeah, another life I would have loved to do, enjoyed doing laundry and taxes with you. Yeah.
I kind of separated out Worf a little bit from Quark, and then as I was writing the notes, I was like, these two plots are really involved together. But I just wanted to comment about how, well, you know, Worf sees himself as this very traditional Klingon, and it takes Dax kind of pointing out to him that he is really not. He does a lot of things to try to get Grelka's attention. Like, he, like, that scene with Morn, where he's, yeah, like,
I will apologize for this letter later.
Yeah,
bitch.
And he just, like, throws Morn off to the side and then, like, you know, kind of challenges Grelka's, like, guard for, like, her affection. He completely forgets that, like, in that moment that his house is dishonored and she's not going to go for him. And I don't know, that old advisor guy, I didn't really catch I think the younger guy's name was Tumak, but I didn't remember what the other guy's name was. But he was like, your house is dishonored, like, Grelka cannot date you. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, like, the performativeness of like Worf to, like in that situation, like, you know, we've talked about how he's like a textbook Klingon, a textbook traditionalist, but yes, not actually, which is the whole kind of theme of this episode. But it's so just not Worf. It's so like put on, right?
Yeah, it feels like really, really acted.
Yeah. It's just like, come on, bro.
Oh, I just accidentally skipped over this, but like when we first see Grilka, you know, Worf is basically like that gif with the wolf and the heart the eyes. Wooga. And the, one. And Dax is like, it seems like you have a bad case of Parmok. And then to explain it to us, Sisko comes in one scene is like, is that contagious? And then Dax gets to explain to Sisko that Parmok is basically love with more aggressive overtones. So I really appreciated that they that like in the moment, obviously, Sisko is the audience and they're trying to tell us, you know, what the title of the episode is about, besides being, you know, a play on the song.
Looking for love in all the wrong places.
Yeah.
I like how Avery just had to come in for one line and then got the rest of the week of shooting off.
Maybe he went on vacation or something. I hope so.
Yeah.
So besides telling Worf that he cannot date Grilka or be with Grilka because of, you know, the aforementioned reasons, he also accuses Worf of, like, not really having ever pursued a Klingon woman and not knowing how to date one. And I think this is true. I mean, even though she was, you know, half human, I also think Kaylor pursued him a little bit more than he pursued her. I mean, until the, you know, let's get married because we are having a baby.
Yeah. Or had a baby. Yeah. Well, and like the whole like part of like, you know, the backstory to their relationship is the idea is like Worf wanted to get married because they had sex.
Yeah.
Because he's that, you know, purity culture, Klingon purity culture.
Comes back around at the end of this episode as well.
Right. And Kalar's like a very much like, she understands Klingon culture. She's aware of tradition. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, she's good at her job, but she's openly non-traditional and she flaunts it. And like that grinds Worf's gears at that time a lot, which is why it didn't work out earlier until all of a sudden, surprise love child. but
yeah, agree. I think it's funny that Worf is like really embarrassed that he had forgotten his place. And I think this is just, I mean, like, he would be embarrassed, but this all is just proof about how he isn't a traditional Klingon.
No, and, like, we've talked about Quark as, like, being kind of similar to Worf in this, where it's, like, he claims to be a traditionalist and he's really not.
Yeah.
And so it's just the idea, the ways in which that, like, the kind of frenemies or rivals or whatever, like, you know, we don't really like each other, where it's like a Seinfeld and Newman thing with Dax being Kramer, like Quark.
That's funny.
Quark and Worf don't get along but have a really good mutual friend.
Oh my god,
they're in some
really
ways a
funny.
Lot more similar than you would think, or they probably even realize, right, within the context of their own cultures.
Yeah, I do like that Dax, like, I mean, obviously Dax is very clearly coming on to Worf.
And he's so fucking clueless
and, like,
about it.
That's been like hinted at even before this episode.
Well, that goes back to Worf's first episode when she like flirts with him.
Yeah.
When he comes onto the station.
And she asks him what he sees in Grilka, and he gives her this list that Dax describes like as a statue. He's like, this sounds like a statue more than a woman. And I do love that Dax is like, if I were in your shoes, I would pick someone a little more entertaining and fun, like basically describing herself.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, hint, hint, poke, poke.
Exactly. Just to catch up where Quark is up until this point, you know, after the opener with the O'Brien Kira fight, we see Grilka come in to Quark's and hug Quark and says to him, you may not have been the ideal husband, but you are an excellent bartender. And Quark's just like, I know of no greater compliment. I kind of love their relationship. Like, he helped her get out of a jam. She is not unaware of, like, you know, who he is. It's just,
yeah,
it's great. I do think it, I couldn't tell. So Grelka is like, yeah, there's been, the war's been really costly to my family. We have lost ships and lands and warriors. And it's very clear to me that, like, she kind of wants Quark to, like, help her a little bit. But she can't ask for help, so he has to, like, offer, and it's, like, a whole thing. But I lost my shit when Quark is just like, war, what is it good for? If you ask me, absolutely nothing. Because it's literally, like, a quote from the song War, which is a song war. I really enjoy. Yeah, it's such a great song.
What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Remember when they, like, when right after kind of, like, 9/11 and, like, the invasion in Afghanistan, how it's like radio stations had to stop playing that song?
Yeah. I also feel like they didn't really play For What It's Worth either.
Yeah.
Which is, like, another anti-war song that I really like.
The whole history of that song particularly is interesting because it was, like, written after, like, a, like, anti-curfew kind of, like, riot on the Sunset Strip, but, like, can take on much more. Oh, wow. Like, you know,
not that that's not a big deal, but that's, like, a lot smaller in scope than I would have guessed.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah, so it's like, yeah, it's an interesting it's an interesting story.
That is interesting. So this is where our Cyrano plot starts. Basically, Quark needs help to impress Grelka and comes and asks Dax. But Worf is sitting there, and basically, you know, Dax is trying to kind of warn him off, like, you know, this is a mating ritual that's very complicated, it's very involved, you need to show respect and take things slow, and then Worf comes in and just says, like, exactly what he should be doing, but it's clear, like, that's what he would do if he had the chance. Like, he knows where Grelka is from and what the traditions of that area are, so, like, he kind of uses that as a guide, and the way he talks about Grelka, like, what he would say to Grelka is very much like Dax is like, oh, I wish he would say that about me, which is kind of interesting. And that's kind of where I felt, where it felt also a little Shakespearean to me, and that there were, like, two different couples that were, like, getting kind of confused up a little. I just felt like a Shakespeare thing.
You just needed Titania and Oberon and Puck, and you would have a Midsummer Night Dream.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it, Worf's advice works. And then Worf's kind of pissed because that guy had called him out and said, "You don't know anything about Klingon women," and he's like, "Yeah, I do, obviously." But he does, but no one knows. Like, he can't just say, like, "This was actually my advice."
Yeah, okay, like, I think it's worth mentioning, just that, like, I think the ideas of the whole, like, it doing the Cyrano thing and the idea of, like, conquest and, like, woman as prize, not great, Bob.
Oh, no, it's gross.
But, and, like, again, I'm not gonna, like, belabor the point, but, like, I did want to just mention that, but, again, two things can be true at once. It can be, like, a not great trope, but also the episode's good.
Yeah, I do think that they put a lot of those topics in Quark's mouth more than anything. Yeah. Like, I would like to acquire you. You are worth, like, X more than Latinum or whatever. Like it's a, like, she's a property. So I do think that they try to get away with it a little bit by having it be like, oh, that's just the Ferengis, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, obviously I agree.
It's
with
a little
you.
Bit in Worf too, but it's, like, also just the way, like, I think we're kind of, like, socialized, and the idea of, like, under patriarchy, like, women are to be pursued and can't show interest. And it's like, you know, yeah. It's,
and I will say that in the end, I mean, I don't want, not to get ahead, like,
it doesn't even matter.
Worf doesn't treat Jadzia that way at all. Which I think, like, she would not stand for that. First of all, but it's very, I feel like Jadzia would, like, play that in the bedroom maybe, but not, like, in the actual, like, larger relationship.
Yeah.
So he's been, so Quark's wooing Grilka. He basically, she calls him my Kalis, and like he calls her my Lucara, and the guard is so angry and challenges Quark to a duel, which is wonderful. So basically they're like, the Dax and Worf have been like giving him like training sessions on like how to get this woman, and now that he like has her, I guess he has to either not show up to the duel and lose her or die.
Yeah.
But we have a secret third option. This is the most bananas thing I've ever seen. Yeah. Dax comes up with this scenario where Worf is like literally controlling Quark as he fights. It's probably, to me, the least believable part of the episode is not that this like is a thing that exists. It's just that I don't think Worf would normally go along with something like this. Like, it feels like dishonorable to me to like fool everyone. Like that part does feel very like not Worf. But I am willing to let that go. Well, this is completely ridiculous. I think it's really funny.
Yeah, and like also I think too, part of it's like Worf's ego that like, yes, I can't woo Grilka because of, you know, my station and all of this like geopolitical stuff, but I know how to court a great lady, right? So
it was so funny. I love that they put the like that like headband thing that they put on the frame
to hide it. Yeah, well, because like doesn't normally wear.
Yeah, so normally I have never Googled this, but my thought has always been they have that for the non-regular, so for like the characters that are not on as often, so they don't have to do as much makeup on like the back of their head and everything. So it's just funny to me that like normally the episode is using that to hide things from us, the viewer, but in this case, in episode, they're using it to hide things from the Klingons. I just think that's very funny.
Totally.
I really enjoyed his like Klingon armor outfit. Of course, we have like a little scare in the middle of the fight that the technology breaks, but then it gets fixed. and to kill time while the thing is broken, Quark makes up this rite of proclamation that is supposedly a Ferengi custom. And so he has the right to make a speech. So he basically is just stalling for time.
Yeah.
Which is really funny. I think it was good that Worf did not have Quark kill this guy. I don't think that Worf or Quark would be happy dealing with the outfall of that. Fallout, not outfall. That is not a word. Quark is too like sensitive for killing someone, in my opinion. He gets to bang Grilka, though.
Yeah, but and like the thing is too is like what. What would have even gone into more, like, dishonor or whatever? It's like, when, you know, after the fight, when they start foreplay, Worf was still going to, like, leave the thing on and control Quark's body. God.
Like Dr. Manhattan in Watchmen when he, like, has his, like, reproductive person, like, the actual version of him's not doing it.
Yeah. It's just like, bro, come on.
I think that's cool if I think that sounds fun if all three people like know what's going on. Like that does sound like it would be really fun. But there'd have to be lots and lots and lots and lots of consent discussed prior to that.
Yeah. Yeah, well it's like in Blade Runner 2049, right?
I still haven't seen that, but you can still say what you're gonna say. Please.
No, it's fine. I'll just leave it at that.
No, I wanted to hear. I was just I'm whining.
I don't want to spoil it for anyone else, so. No, there's a scene where, like, Ana de Armas plays, like, a digital assistant, or, like, a digital, like, virtual, like, character, like a hologram.
Yeah.
And she hires Mackenzie Davis, who plays a sex worker, to have sex with Ryan Gosling, but, like, she merges her image, like Ana de Armas merges her like digital image over like Mackenzie Davis. So it's like it's the AI and like Mackenzie Davis's body kind of as an avatar where they mix. So
you are making me want to watch this movie because all those people are hot.
Yeah. So. also, Robin Wright is in the movie and is also very attractive in that kind of like, slick back, like boss lesbian sort of way. Yes. Kind of Catherine Tramell-ish in a way, actually.
I got you.
Yeah.
Dax is very frustrated that Worf is not seeing what's right in front of him, and she starts a very sexy fight with him, where she yells a bunch of stuff in Klingon, which I assume is like, get your head out of your ass, please. I'm right here. And he says, I know I'm stupid. This is me, like, imagining what they were saying. And he's like, I know, I'm sorry, I'm stupid, but, like, let's fight. And fuck. I did love the scene at the end where, like, Quark and Grilka come in with, like, a ton. Or actually, I should say, Quark has a ton of injuries. Grilka seemed quite unharmed. And then Worf and Dax come in, and she has, like, scratches on her face. Her hair's all messed up. His hair's, like, out of its ponytail. And Julian is like, I do not want to know anything about what happened here. And then that's when we find that Worf finally will admit that he maybe is not as traditional as he thinks he is.
Yeah.
Because he's like, technically we should get married. And Dax is like, let's take it one day at a time, buddy.
Yeah. And then, like, the whole, like, Bashir's like, what happened here? Oh, no, I don't want to know. And then Dax and Worf come in, and this is saying, oh, no, I don't know. I won't ask that question anymore. People will just come in, and I will treat them.
Which is funny, because I feel like if it was just Dax and Julian together, he'd be like, please give me the hot goss.
Yeah.
You know Julian and Jadzia gossip together. And Quark. I feel like they all are gossips. I did like how she, like, snuggled into his arms.
Yeah, totally. Was there anything else you wanted to cover before we move into the other segments?
I don't think so. Oh, I did want to say it was interesting to me that after that guy lost the duel, Grilka fired his ass. She was like, okay, yeah, you can't work for me anymore, sorry.
Discharged from my service.
Yes. I wonder, like, how the next person gets that job.
Yeah, like, what's the application process like? I know. Did you just promote someone else from the guard?
It's like a gang initiation. You have to, like, murder someone.
Yeah, right. All right. Speaking of sex and, you know, needing to seek medical treatment after, you know, a very fun and enthusiastic consenting activity. Now it's time for the Elterwater Thirst Quencher. Elterwater first being mentioned within the context of Star Trek in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Also possibly a reference to Alta from Alter 4 from the sci-fi classic Forbidden Planet, also known as Space the Tempest. Elise, who are you thirsting for this week?
This is a very thirsty episode for me. So I was just like, first of all, really into how disheveled Worf and Dax are at the end. Would have enjoyed being party to that. And also, a lot of the tension with Miles and Nerys is just very thirsty. But, like, also, well, sorry, not also, but, like, most specifically that massage scene where she's just, like, on her side. And she's like, Miles, you're such a sadist. And, like, it's just very hot.
there's a character in Baldur's Gate 3 where she's very warrior, kind of like Klingon sort of tropes. And if you romance her, in Githyanki and her language, the like term for like the real like intimate term of endearment is the sort, like, it translates to the source of my bruises or something like that. Nice. So I feel like she and the Klingons would get along. Do you have a nominee for the most Star Trek thing?
Not really. I kind of spaced on it.
Yeah, so mine was angry Klingons being racist.
I'll just hop onto yours.
Right, hop on. Oh, no, but it's like when the bodyguards, like,
listeners,
I can't see them together. Rawr, I'm gonna blow up my life because yeah. I'm so, you know, Klingon supremacist or something. I don't know.
That's funny. I'm still laughing that I said hop on to yours.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, at least until next time, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram and at You can find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z, as well as anywhere you listen to podcasts. We are now in season 3 of True Blood.
Part of me is like really impressed. I'm like, oh my God, they're already on season 3 and we're only on season 5 of DS9. But yeah, also, there's more of you to record.
Yeah,
and seasons are half the length. So I'm like, yeah. Okay, part of it's like scheduling and, you know, life, but yeah. A lot of it's like, oh, you just be starting season 2 of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. No, like we rotate a lot. So like all yeah. 4 of us will be on the premiere and the season premiere and the season finale. But otherwise, it's yeah. usually just 2 of us. So it's like yeah. easier to schedule with 2 people. Plus, yeah. Lazzy keeps us sense. On a pretty tight schedule, and I say that very complimentary because it like really keeps us from like not doing it. Like we do season yeah. take 4 weeks off, do the next season, take 4 weeks off, like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, and it'd probably be like even logistically. So this is how the sausage is made, folks. I hope you're enjoying this. With him living like, you know, across an ocean,
yes.
and clock lands and all of that, it becomes even more important, right?
Yeah.
Or more difficult and then more important, right?
Yeah. So like usually if it's like all 4 of us in an episode, we'll record at like 5:30 p.m. my time, like Eastern time on like a Friday night. So it's like...
Yeah.
4:30 for Melissa, 3:30 for Tasia, and like 9:30 for Laz. 9:30 now because of the time. They haven't done time change, but 10:30 norm, like for him, which is late yeah. to be recording.
Right. All right. And you can also, sorry, we're in the middle of outros. You can also okay. find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Matty Hugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at PodRace. And you can email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer... and program.
Bye.